Now, the New South Wales Parliament has been recalled today as the Minns government moves to rush through new laws after the Bondi terrorist attack. The proposed changes would tighten gun laws, expand hate speech offences, and criminalise the public display of symbols and slogans linked to banned terrorist groups. The government has also flagged a tougher approach to large protests as it looks for ways to prevent further violence. Kenneth Stern is the director of the Centre for the Study of Hate at Bard College, New York, and the lead drafter of the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's working definition of anti-Semitism. Welcome back to Radio National Breakfast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Kenneth Stern, first of all, it's been 8 days now since the horrific attack at Bondi Beach. What was your response when you first heard of it?
Oh, I found it absolutely shocking, deplorable. I mean, just amazing to think about people celebrating Hanukkah and then having this type of massacre occur. But you know, I also thought about things in the United States, too. We had the Tree of Life and other incidents, too. And one of the things that I commend Australia for is thinking about guns in the aftermath of this, because in mass shootings in the United States, we don't go there, unfortunately. And thinking about what happened, at Bondi Beach, I could imagine if that happened here, it would have been with assault rifles and it would have been even deadlier. So it's just awful.
What about then the response we've seen so far from Australian authorities, news that the state and federal governments want to tighten laws around hate speech? What have you made of what you've heard so far?
Well, I've seen some things in the proposals that I like. The increased security for Jewish institutions, I think that's a no-brainer. If the information is true about the people that carried this out, that they were ISIS-affiliated, I'd also think it would be appropriate to increase money for security for churches, too. We just have to think back to this summer that ISIS-affiliated group massacred a bunch of people at a church in the Congo. But those types of responses are fine. Thinking about going after speech, though, and speech particularly that's related to the pro-Palestinian movement, I think is counterproductive. I mean, historically, when you do that and you try to limit speech, it backfires. And in the United States, we've seen evidence of that, too. To give you an example, one of the things that I saw in the proposal is to talk about Holocaust education. Holocaust education is not a panacea for everything, but I think it's an important component. When the IRA definition was applied at Columbia University here as part of a settlement, there was a Jewish faculty member who teaches about anti-Semitism, who teaches about the genocide, who is somebody who comes from a family of Holocaust survivors, said, I can't teach anymore. This type of restriction tells me I can't teach about Hannah Arendt, who had concerns about Zionism. So those types of things backfire. I'd rather keep the eye on the prize about what drives people into hateful ideologies. That's why I run a hate center. We calculate things about the cost of hate crimes and the impact on people, ways to use education to get people to see the complexities of some of the issues around Israel and Palestine, why people break down into, this sort of us versus them bucket. But when you start targeting particular types of speech, it may feel good, but it actually does great harm.
On Radio National Breakfast, I'm speaking with Kenneth Stern, the director of the Centre for the Study of Hate at Bard College. The federal government has said in the wake of the attack that it will adopt recommendations from the Siegel Review into anti-Semitism. Gillian Siegel recommended, for example, that academic institutions are given a report card into how much they are tackling anti-Semitism and suggested that funding could be linked to that report. What do you make of that?
I think that's a horrible place to go. I think one of the things that education does is it teaches people about how to, again, look at complexities, right? And so there are different narratives about Israel and about anti-Semitism that's related, that some people say is related to anti-Zionism. So you have inside the Jewish community, and I know in Australia too, you have a divide about whether people are Zionist or not because of what their Judaism teaches them. You have pro-Palestinian folks who may say, wait a minute, you know, why am I going to be penalized for saying something that's perceived as anti-Zionism and is created as anti-Semitism under this rubric when all I'm talking about is not hatred of Jews, I'm talking about what the reestablishment of Israel meant for me. So when you start going down that path, you stop people from actually having productive discussions about difficult issues. What I would rather see is there are some like AI-aided programs and other types of courses that will help people bridge these divides. How do we have these discussions? That's important for college students to learn and to really reevaluate why somebody may have a thoroughly different point of view, as opposed to saying the government top-down is telling you this is how you have to look at it. In the United States, you know, I'm concerned about not only people promoting that about anti-Semitism, but we're seeing things about gender. We're seeing things about race that we're telling people in colleges what they can and can't teach. That's destructive to the college enterprise, and it's destructive to democracy. We want people to discuss these complicated issues, not to say in a McCarthyite way, you're going to have your funding pulled, you're going to somehow have other consequences for having a point of view we might disagree with. There should not be an official government point of view on things like Israel-Palestine.
The government also says it will adopt the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance's working definition of anti-Semitism, the one that you drafted. Now, I read the definition. It sounds reasonable. It's short. Anti-Semitism is a certain perception of Jews, which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews. Tell me, what are your concerns about the use of that definition?
Sure. And actually, I was the lead drafter of the text of that became the IRA definition. It was actually put together in 2004 and 2005 to help data collectors in Europe take the temperature of anti-Semitism. And it had some examples, and the examples are the contentious part about Israel, because that was relevant to understanding the societal temptation to look at Jews in certain ways and hate crimes and so forth. But the problem is that since then, it hasn't been used for that primary purpose. It's been used to try to stigmatize pro-Palestinian speech. And since 2010, you know, you've seen instances where, I'll give you one in Germany, it was used to label Jewish people who were protesting the war in Gaza as anti-Semites. And one of the commentators said, gee, isn't it ironic that Germany is yet again deciding what's an official Jewish position? What does it mean to be Jewish? I don't want governments deciding that. It's an internal Jewish debate between those who see, you know, I count myself in that group. Zionism is important because of Jewish connection to identity and history and so forth. But there are Jews who say, wait a minute, I don't believe in a Jewish state until the Messiah comes. And there are the ones, younger ones, who say, by and large, that what Judaism teaches them about repairing the world and treating the stranger, how we treat the stranger, makes it so they don't believe in a Jewish state. I may disagree with them on the politics. I don't want the government or anybody else declaring them anti-Semitic. And that's the import of what this would do. We wouldn't do it about other religions and other ethnic groups, and shouldn't do it about the Jewish community either. We should keep our eye on the ball of fighting the ideologies and fighting the things that bring people into an anti-Semitic worldview that see Jews as conspiring to harm humanity and giving an explanation for that, whether it's ISIS or the far right or elsewhere. There are a whole bunch of different initiatives, including educational and community-wise and collaborative with other groups to actually focus on the root causes of this. When we have the seductive, simple thing that we're going to take a definition and put statements on one side or another and be done with the whole issue, that's actually making things worse.
Kenneth Stern, thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you so much for having me.